Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann. Well, after 100 episodes under our belt, I've decided to mix things up a bit. So, in collaboration with the folks leading the United Nations Food System Summit, we're launching an 8-part mini-series featuring conversations with influencers and champions having impact on food, people, and the planet. The mini-series is called Laying Down Tracks. Hopefully it'll be a forum to help define new paths forward. This riff on recording audio tracks is also a shout out to the action tracks which align directly with the UN Food System Summit's 5 objectives. It's an honor to be working alongside this historic summit set on convening a global audience of movers and shakers making all kinds of good things happen in all corners. In each episode of the series, we'll profile stellar guests and a co-host. Each are instrumental in laying down these tracks for the summit. See what I did there? That's pretty good, huh? So for this initial episode, the focus of Action Track 1, a track dedicated to food access, joining me as co-host is the Executive Director of the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition, Dr. Lawrence Hanad. Hey, Lawrence, how you doing?
Hey, Aaron. I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, thank you for joining. You were kind enough to join me as a guest in episode 80 of Sourcing Matters back a little while ago. And that was a tremendous learning experience. I took a lot out of that. I know our listeners did as well. I would encourage our new listeners to lend an ear to that episode for the full narrative. But just to establish a little bit of context there, a quick overview, the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition was launched at the UN in 2002 to tackle the human suffering caused by malnutrition. GAIN aims at making healthier food choices more affordable, more available, and more desirable. The UN estimates that more than 820 million people are undernourished. That's a jump up from 60 million people in the last 5 years. And nearly a quarter of all children under 5 are stunted, with 1.9 billion adults being overweight. That's according to the World Health Organization. So food access has a few angles here, some too little, some too much, as you explained to us in that previous episode. So Lawrence, you are the chair of Action Track 1, focus on food access, as we mentioned. What interesting things can we expect to see leading into the summit regarding food access?
And one of the exciting things about this summit is that it brings these 5 different communities together. So there's the community that I'm immersed in, hunger, nutrition, food safety, but that there is these other communities. People are worrying about climate and environment and livelihoods and resilience, and food systems affect all of those things, and all of those things affect food systems. So it's very exciting to be here. What our action track is trying to do is really do 3 things. Reverse hunger numbers. As you quite rightly said, hunger numbers are going up even before COVID-19. So they're going to go up much faster because of COVID. We're trying to make nutritious food and healthy diets affordable to people. 3 billion people can't afford a healthy diet right now. 74% of all Africans cannot afford a healthy diet. That's extraordinary. So that goes beyond hunger. And then, of course, food safety. There are hundreds of millions of unsafe food incidences every year. And if food isn't safe, it can't be nutritious. So that's what we're trying to do. We've been searching far and wide, like all the other action tracks, for ideas that we call game-changing ideas. They're ideas that say, let's take something that's been in the box, in the too difficult box, and let's take it out of the too difficult box. And let's have a look at it and see, really, is it really too difficult, or are we just not being bold or creative or imaginative enough? And the spirit of the time that we're in with COVID-19, and COVID-19 has taken a wrecking ball to so many things, so many conventions, so many mindsets, unfortunately, so many lives, and a lot of pain and tragedy and hurt but it has also loosened up the way we think and act and who we work with. And so lots of things that were seemingly impossible have become possible. Look at the massive $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill that's just passed in the US. Look at vaccines that have been developed. Normally we hear it takes 10 years, it took 10 or 12 months. So we're trying to take advantage of that time, the time we're in, plus the summit, because the summit brings together all these people that never normally work together because they live these parallel lives in these parallel universes. Now we're putting all of that together. All sorts of stuff seems possible. So I'll give you a couple of examples. And actually, I'll give you three examples. And the third one is the one that Sophie and Maureen are leading. The first one, one example, anemia. We think, you know, anemia numbers for women have been stuck at 50%, 40 to 50% for the last 25 years. I mean, it's actually quite extraordinary. So we've got some researchers who've said to us, actually, the way we've been measuring and assessing anemia is completely wrong. The risk factors we've been assigning to anemia are completely wrong. This is very recent research. And so that opens up a whole vista of possibilities to bring the food system, for example, fortifying rice, which is consumed by 4 or 5 billion people the world over, with iron, zinc, and folate. Bringing the health sector together with the food sector. The health system supplies micronutrient supplements to pregnant and lactating women. And the environment sector, because we know malaria prevalence is a very key risk factor for anemia. And then we wrap all of that around in a women's empowerment frame, because women get anemia three or four times as high in women as it is in men. So if you put all of that together and you put all of the key players in those areas together, you have something, an ending anemia alliance. You have something that actually could end anemia by 2030. So that's the kind of level of ambition we have. Another initiative that we're developing is called an End Hunger for Good Fund. And the idea here is, you know, hunger numbers are going up, and they're going to go up faster than that. But there's a study that's just come out, a really authoritative study that brings 25 organizations from 30 different countries together. It's called the SERES 2030 study. And it says, you know what? We can get hunger from the current levels down to less than 200 million by 2030. So that's not quite ending hunger, but it's getting it down to a pretty low number. It's 2.5% of the world's population by 2030. How do we do that? They lay it out. There's a playbook. They say, here are the 12 key areas to invest in. This is what the research and the evidence is telling us. And this is how much it's going to cost. And you know what? It's going to cost $33 billion extra a year. $33 billion. Is that a big amount of money or is it a small amount of money? $1.9 trillion relief package just passed in the US. $33 billion per year. Put that number, let's not put it against the relief package. Put it against the increase in market valuation of tech companies in the last 12 months. The NASDAQ has gone up by 44% in the last 12 months. Tech companies are incredibly highly valued. A lot of big businesses have made a lot of money in the last 12 months. And we feel it's their moral obligation, and actually it's the right thing for them to help contribute to this $33 billion a year fund that would actually end hunger. In 2030, we'd be able to look back and say, you know what, we were part of ending hunger, and it started at this summit. So the third idea is the Youth Pledge, which I'm sure Sophie and Maureen will tell you about, but the general idea is, you know, youth are the cohort, the generation that's going to have to live with the choices that are made now. They're already living with the choices we made in the last 20 years, but they're going to have to live with the choices we make for the longest of all of us in the next 10 years. So they need to be driving change and part of change. They can't do it on their own. Everyone has to play a role. but for too long they've been excluded from this space. And so we were determined, and in fact it was Sophie and Maureen, I think we came up with this idea over Twitter, didn't we? That there should be some kind of youth pledge. And I'll let them tell you more about it, Aaron.
Many of my initial questions are tied to the youth pledge, so good segue. But I just want to make sure I got something correct here, Lawrence, before we jump into that. So what you're saying here is let's embrace what's happened with COVID in a certain extent, that never let a crisis go to waste, right? If we institute systems thinking in a more cohesive, orchestrated approach, boy, this is an opportunity unlike no other to really leverage food systems to have impact on people and planet.
That's exactly right. I'm going to get you to write the press release. That's a brilliant statement. It's, you know, COVID has shaken things up. And it's like an earthquake that reveals the bones of a system. You know, the bones of an ancient dead animal are exposed through an earthquake. And maybe sometimes you only ever see the head or the tail or the foot, but COVID has shown us the whole system at the same time, because it's been a shock to the entire system. And so we've all become much more system aware. And actually, we've become more aware of which bits of the system in which contexts are just not working. And we've got the tools to fix it. We really have the tools. It's just, you know, do we have the wherewithal? Do we have the coordination? Because it takes coordination to fix a system. You have to think in systems and act in systems. And I think thinking in systems and acting in systems is where we've been falling down. And COVID's drawn the curtain back and shown us the system, shown us the bits that don't work. And also it's shown us that when we work together, we can achieve extraordinary things.
All right. So let's jump into today's conversation with some powerhouse younger folks that are leading the way. So joining as guests for episode one of Laying Down Tracks, we welcome Maureen Mukitha from Africa, Kenya in Africa. Hey, Maureen, how you doing?
Hey, Aaron. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you so much. And Sophie Healy-Thau from Ireland. Sophie, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
All right. Thanks. Crystal clear. Don't even hear the big storm happening there in Ireland right now. So good stuff. Well, fingers crossed. Hey, Maureen, let's start there. Let's start right away with the Youth Pledge. Could you tell us more about the Youth Pledge and how this came to be? Oh, maybe we lost Maureen. Sophie, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I was going to ask you the same question after Maureen, so would you mind starting, taking a rip at this and see what your point of view is on the Youth Pledge?
Sure. So as Lawrence said, the Youth Pledge came about because Maureen and I, we saw a tweet that Lawrence had put out about a young girl called Dipti from Bangladesh who managed to convince the government of Bangladesh to pioneer a national plan of action with nutrition as a key pillar targeting adolescents around a campaign Dipti and like thousands of other young people from Bangladesh had initiated called Eat Well, Live Well campaign. And we replied to that tweet being like, this should be a global campaign. And Lawrence was like, let's do it. So Maureen and I, we got together, we created a proposal and it was accepted. So we wanted Dipti's campaign to be a global campaign, and Dipti is actually now a team member of ours. So it was really as simple as that. We saw something that could be scaled up and we got together. And we're trying to make that a reality now.
So I've always been intrigued by the youth point of view. I have a couple of teenagers at home, but more so the millennials, the generation next, and the perspective that they have on this more systems thinking approach, the cohesive approach to solving some of these problems. And I would even put it as a more empathetic approach to understanding that these problems are real and that in your lifetime, these have to be addressed. It's existential that we get to these problems. So what are some of the core competencies of the pledge? What do you hope to accomplish by bringing the youth voice out to the open?
Does Maureen want to take that one?
Yes. Aaron, what we plan to or what we aim to accomplish with the pledge is, first of all, bring youth together and make them see or make them understand that they have the power to realize the change that we want to see in terms of food systems, access to more nutritious foods, and also to make youth commit towards ensuring that there's access to nutritious foods, or them taking small change, because what we aim to do is to make youth understand that you don't necessarily have to come up with these very big ideas, but just in the environment that you are in, you have the ability to create change and to make things happen. Yeah.
So the collective effort and all of the small micro movements involved add up to monumental change.
That's right. And also to hold government and those in positions of power accountable and make them commit towards ending hunger, because hunger is something that affects each one of us, and investing in nutrition it has a ripple effect across all other sectors. So let us not look at investing in nutrition as you want to see the return on investment today, but it will be seen. It comes once you invest in nutrition, you'll be able to see the results or the fruits of nutrition across the board, not just in children.
Lawrence, I'll encourage you to jump in with any follow-up questions you have on these, and I'll keep going with the questions I have listed out. But that's what a phenomenal and exciting initiative to launch. And does it have certain milestones, Maureen or Sophie, does it have certain milestones that you hope to reach going into the 2021 UN Food Systems Summit, or is it more of over a 5-10 year horizon? How are you setting up areas or success monitors or matrix to this?
Yeah, great question. We actually hope to gain 1 million signatures by the Food Systems Summit, and then 100 million by the end of the Sustainable Development Goals in 2030. So we are motivated, we're passionate, and we know we'll get these as well. We're really, really confident in young people's ability and passion for changing food systems.
Maybe I can jump in, Aaron.
Please.
I'm gonna ask, I'm so inspired listening to these two. It's amazing. What can I ask both of you, Maureen and Sophie, what's your biggest worry about this? If you have one, you may not have one. And I think one of my slight worries is we'll get lots of signatures, but people will just, you know, it's easy to sign up to something. Will we get some action behind it? Do we worry about that or not? And if we do worry about it, how do we change it? So I've shared my worry. What are your worries?
Wow, interesting question. My worry, I also share the same worry with you, Lawrence. Having conversations, and by the end of the summit or even 2030, we have nothing to show for what we have been advocating for. But how we plan to cap this is to ensure that we are involving youths from the word go by inviting them to participate in independent dialogues, for them to come up, or for everybody to be able to share solutions or ideas that they think can work in their particular regions. So yeah, maybe I'd invite also Sophie to share something.
Yeah, this is a great question. I don't think my worry lies with young people. I have full confidence in young people, and I know that young people are already taking small actions of change within their locality to change food systems, but they mightn't know it. So the pledge isn't just about garnering or gaining signatures. It's not just a retweet or a share on Facebook. It's about committing to hosting workshops, meaningful exchanges about the importance of sustainable healthy diets, animals, biodiversity. It's also about just, you know, maybe your pledge is to have 3 vegetarian meals a week, or become vegan for a month, or maybe you take that action further and you lobby governments and people in positions of power and big businesses to get on board with you. So my worry doesn't lie with young people, it lies with the government policymakers and the big businesses. Because right now, as Lawrence mentioned, young people have to live the longest with the decisions being made today. They affect our future. And I really, that's my biggest worry, that big businesses and governments won't stand with young people, because to be honest, they don't have a great track record. But I hope that by the power of our movement, they'll see that young people are committed and they have to be committed to us as well.
I wonder if go ahead, Maureen.
I just wanted to echo, I totally agree with what Sophie is saying. And I think this is also why we are urging, when we are planning the independent dialogues, for more government officials to be involved.
That's great. I mean, I think it's great. I think you're right to be worried about the rest of us not doing what we're supposed to do. I wonder if there's have you given any thought to whether youth could set up some accountability mechanism, or be a part of other people's accountability mechanism to, you know, say government X, you said you were going to do these 10 things in September 2021. Well, as of 2023 or 2024, you haven't done any of them.
Midterm reviews?
Something. I mean, grading the policymakers, something like that. I think it'd be great if you guys could brainstorm it a bit at some stage. It's a burden, and there are existing mechanisms that I think will try to track this, but I don't think they'll track it from a youth perspective. So it'd be great either for you to set up your own mechanism or to try to get involved in designing the mechanisms that will be set up for the summit.
It would be fascinating to take it from an angle of both carrot and stick, right? I mean, holding them accountable from a point of view of making declarations of what they say they're going to do is definitely an angle, but also coming tooled with 1 million signatures or 100 million signatures or some impact and power gives them appreciation, especially businesses, or if they're constituents of voting populace, that you have a loud voice in the room here and your impact does matter. And there can be direct and immediate opportunity of connecting it to both their stakeholders, which we are all one of, but their shareholders too. And I think that is, something to be said around tying that in. And I think using the 17 SDGs as a way of quantifying some of this is a real opportunity. I know a lot of people are trying to move in that direction on the financing side. So it may not, there may be too much there initially going into the summit, but at least something to consider or something to brainstorm with those different groups. They're probably looking for answers as well.
Well, maybe a kind of a youth commentary on if there are formal accountability mechanisms, maybe a youth commentary on the findings of the sort of the commentary that associates a test score. I think that'd be really, really powerful, actually. Can I ask you a different question, guys, both of you? How are you going to, at least these are kind of unfair questions I'm asking you because you may not have had a chance to think about it, but how are you going to reach youth that are not, don't have access to Twitter or social media or any, that don't even have access to electricity? How are you thinking, what's the strategy for those youth?
We were actually just talking about this the other day and brainstorming. So we don't have a full plan, but I think what we started to talk about was working with organizations and people who are already working in those areas, such as refugee camps or rural areas where, due to malnutrition, people have had to drop out of school or there isn't access to electricity or Wi-Fi. And those areas even exist in the UK and Ireland and the US. So it's really a global issue. And I think what we were saying was using teachers' networks, the scouts, using sporting facilities or sporting teams, using different mechanisms such as art groups or youth-led campaigns within those areas to get to those people. So hopefully it won't be just an online initiative, but will spread out to be central in those communities. So hopefully we can reach those people because they matter more than anybody really. And their voices have to be heard alongside the people who have access to Wi-Fi and electricity, like you said.
Maureen, in the communities that you work in Kenya, what are some of the strategies you have for overcoming these barriers?
Working with the local community and local leaders. So you'll find in communities there are those people who they've either been identified as the community leaders. So it is identifying various community leaders in different communities and working with them. So how we do it is you either bring them together, those from communities that are close to each other, train them what now, like for example, these food systems, train them about what food systems are, and create an environment where they can also be able to share, and then give them power to go and hold such discussions in their villages. And once in a while, you could also it's also important to follow them in the villages to be able to ensure that the conversations that are being held are taking the right direction. But just as Sophie said, it is identifying places or facilities which they also visit, and visiting them. So it is you taking yourself to where these people are found, because they have no access to either internet or places where they can be able to be updated on what is happening. So getting out of your comfort zone and going to where they are.
The idea of matrix for qualification and quantification, acquisition of these types of new users, it is all tremendous stuff. It's like one of those situations, though, Sophie and Maureen, when you're in class, you raise your hand with a good idea and the teacher says, yeah, you just put more work on your lap. So how about that, right? All of a sudden, you guys just came out of here with all these new things to do. But no, just kidding. We're chatting it out now, right? We're just kind of working through. We're seeing what's going to stick, what are good ideas. And I think it's creating a movement. It's engaging. You're spawning these new ideas. Let me do this. I'm going to read each of your bios here. I'll follow up. I'll start with Sophie and give a little bit of your background, and then I'll ask a question that's tied to some of these things, and same for Maureen. So Sophie Healy, though, is a youth activist who promotes food security and gender equality. She is a lead group member of the Scaling Up Nutrition movement and serves on the board of leading international charity ActionAid UK, and is the co-chair of the UN's Food Systems Summit Youth Liaison Group. Sophie is recognized, or she was recognized by Time Magazine, as one of the most influential teens. It's impressive stuff. So, Sophie, I have a follow-up question similar to what we were just speaking to. And Lawrence asked about folks that don't have access to technology and information. Maybe this is kind of that balancing act of folks that either or have malnutrition or underfed, or those who are overfed. But the question I have is for folks that get too much information, the noise out there. I find it. I mean, there's noise for all of us, but especially for teens and young adults. So how should folks cut through all the chatter and best figure out how to participate in food as preventative human and planet care as a movement?
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's easy to get bogged down in the Twitter debates or the Instagram stories and what's real and what isn't. And when it really comes down to it, food system is where your food came from, how it got on your plate, and how what you're doing with the waste that comes from food. So it's really, you know, sometimes the Twitter and the social media, it really isn't that important at all, because it all starts at home or in the school environment or in the working place. And what people, I think, sometimes forget is just how important food is. So our generation is like the digital age. We're probably more connected than earlier generations completely, but we also experience so many new challenges. We have fewer jobs on the market. More young people are dropping out of school. There's the pandemic. We also experience climate change anxiety, and I think we don't want young people to experience like this food system anxiety either. It has to be explained to them in a simple way. How can you ensure that what you're eating has a little impact on the environment around you? And that's sometimes as simple as choosing food that's local to you, or eating food that's within season, or composting. You know, these little things actually have such a huge impact, even reading the labels on your food and seeing where that food comes from. But also, it's so easy to say that, but with the rising cost of living, food is becoming so much more expensive. So that's when it comes into play to talk to your decision makers, or write them a letter, or take part in the pledge, really. But yeah, I think you hit on a very good point, not overcomplicate it.
It's taken me 46 years to realize that propagating in fear is not the methodology, right? And I think I've been a big proponent myself of being working within movements, the call to action. I think you nailed it, Sophie. That's it. We have this opportunity to use something that's so intimate to us all, like food systems and our local food movements, or the connection to family and community and society, as a leverageable asset that we all can relate to. We can find a common enemy and work as a collective and really kind of moving the needle here on planet action, human social welfare elements. I mean, it is it's a cornucopia of opportunity if we then connect this to a movement. So I think that's very wise words. Lawrence, did you have thoughts for Sophie on that?
Well, you know, I love the, you know, we can do something about this ourselves. We don't have to wait for permission to do anything. And I'm always trying to inculcate that in my staff and in my partners and in my colleagues. We don't have to wait for permission to do things. If you think it's the right thing to do, try it. If it fails, fine. You'll learn something. So I, you know, it's taken me a long time also, Aaron, to sort of figure that out. And I'm just in awe of these two with us today, because they kind of know that they don't have to wait for permission. They're responsible. They're not going to be making rash decisions, but they're also They're bold. They're bold in a quiet, steely way. And that's exactly what we need. So I'm just kind of in awe of them, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because they're on the call with us.
I do agree. I think talk about inspirational leadership and getting things done. You know, and Lawrence, I'll just say that if I'm going to be writing your press release, you're going to come on the road with me and be my co-host, because you set this up perfectly.
All right.
Because Maureen,
with you. I wanted to ask them another question, Aaron, if
yeah.
I can.
Yeah. Can I do this? Lawrence?
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. No, I'm going to let you go. I wanted to make sure we give ample time to Maureen to talk about her
body. Oh,
her
yes, background. Of course. Yep. Go ahead, Maureen.
And then maybe we can host that at the end. So Maureen, speaking of action-led effort and just getting up and making things happen, your bio lead reads this, that Maureen rolls up her sleeves to do what she loves best, which is fighting hunger, malnutrition, and poverty. Her efforts to raise awareness of proper feeding habits and improve food security in her community has enabled her to impact over 2,000 community members by equipping them with nutrition knowledge through nutritional education talks, and improve food security through training young women to cultivate indigenous vegetables on vegetable gardens in over 800 low-income earning households. Just awesome stuff. So Maureen, could you share with us a bit of your inspiration to launch your initiative called, it's Tule Viema, correct?
Yes, that's correct, Aaron.
So would you share? Yeah, I'd love to hear more about how it came about and just, you know, what's been surprising in launching this initiative?
Wow, that's a great question, Adrian. What motivated me to form Tule Vyema is I come from, or I have my roots in an area that has the leading cases of malnutrition. So seeing children going hungry and seeing mothers making tough decisions of who eats and people going to bed hungry, not a day or two, is what led me into studying nutrition. I'm a nutritionist by profession. And I realized subconsciously that if whatever I want to see happen, I do not need to wait for someone. Just as Sophie has said, it is up to me to make the change. So that's what led me into studying nutrition. And when I was still in school doing my undergraduate research, I realized that nutrition, there's a big gap on nutrition or about nutrition. People think nutrition is a very complex topic or a very complex subject to talk about, and nutrition is for a certain class. So this, it led me into starting to share the knowledge that I have acquired in school, because I realized this knowledge I am sharing with my family members, but there are so many people who are suffering from non-communicable diseases. We are now seeing non-communicable diseases as a global burden, and that is how Tule Vyema was formed, just to share knowledge of what I was acquiring in school. And as we started sharing knowledge, we realized that indeed people appreciating the knowledge that we are sharing, because we are localizing nutrition. You know, I remember one day as we were discussing about the pledge with Sophie and Dipti, we started talking about how things like, I think strawberries, it's not a very common fruit in Kenya, but in various countries, that's a locally available fruit. So sharing with community members and telling them you don't need to eat expensive foods, eat what is locally available. We have continued to see community members appreciating the importance of eating well, and alongside training them how to cultivate indigenous vegetables on vertical gardens. What we have learned across or during this journey is that people want to know about nutrition. We just need to break it down and make it more localized to their context, and giving them solutions or just guiding them. Everyone has solutions, but just providing a guide. And now more so that we work with women, you find when we start our nutrition talks, women are not very vocal or very active. They do not participate they do not actively engage in the community talks, in the nutrition talks. But as we go along, you find they start opening up. So it is also about providing a platform where people can be able to share.
Fantastic. Lawrence, I cut you off. I'm sorry. Please jump in.
No, it was fascinating to listen to Maureen. So thank you. No, I mean, this generational question really for you, Maureen and Sophie. You know, when I was your age, the world was very much split into health, agriculture, environment. We didn't talk much about climate change, and we sort of thought vertically a lot more. I think now I think your generation thinks horizontally a lot more. You think more about joined up solutions, I think. So I wanted to ask you, you know, you both come from a nutrition background, I think, or a nutrition interest. When you meet other youth leaders who are interested in food systems, but from a climate perspective or a livelihoods or rights perspective, how do you connect with them quickly? Does it take time to learn each other's language, or is it quite a quick connection?
We actually have a lot of climate activists on our core team of the pledge, and we have social justice activists as well. And you know what? It's so easy to connect because we all understand the differences, but we also understand that each of us in our respective interested fields bring a broader and a deeper knowledge to what we're trying to achieve, and we can't work without another. That's just not a workplace in which I think any of us thought we would even work in. We can't do the pledge without social justice activists. We can't do the pledge without climate activists, just like we can't do the pledge without people who work on gender or on LGBTQI plus rights. You know, it's just not possible to work without the other. And we work so well. It's so easy and it's fun. And we learn so much from each other. Like Maureen was talking about that conversation we had with Dipti, and you know, it was fun to learn what a healthy diet is in Bangladesh and how that's different to a healthy diet in Kenya, and what foods are affordable for me as a young person in Ireland and what foods are affordable in Bangladesh. And it turns out the affordable foods in Ireland are really expensive in Bangladesh, but the affordable foods in Bangladesh are really expensive in Ireland. And having those conversations that are open and interesting, yeah, it's long answer short, it's really easy.
I have a big smile on my face. Maureen.
Sorry, Lawrence, I think I have poor connection on my end. I didn't get your question right.
Well, it was just Maureen, that sometimes, you know, people in my generation, we make it hard for each other to talk across across domains. So we'll people who work in climate, that's their job, and we'll leave them to it. They're the experts, but they'll get on with it. It's too difficult for us to connect with them. And I think this is, it's like one of those plants that, you know, that when a plant grows, the different leaves and the branches are close together, but as it gets older and older and older, the branches and the leaves get further and further apart, and it's difficult to bridge it. And I'm just wondering, are you guys, in your generation, going to learn how to, maybe you don't even need to learn, maybe you already know it, you're going to learn how to think laterally. I think so many people in my generation think unilaterally. So it was a question of how easy is it, how challenging is it for you to connect it, you know, really quickly with someone who's a youth leader working on food systems, but is really immersed in climate justice, for example?
It's quite easy for us. And I think why it's easy is because we understand nobody has monopoly of knowledge. Like, for example, Lana, who is very passionate about climate change. So when it comes to matters climate change, I may necessarily not have as much information as she has. And it is now for me, when we get to that point, it is for me to, or for anybody else who's not really good in climate change, to sit back and learn from Lana and learn from the person, and also give them the opportunity to share what they have. It's all about giving everybody an opportunity to air what they think is right and not wanting to run the show by yourself.
Hmm. Yeah, can I just add on that? I think what's really beautiful is that we all have the same goal. We all want a better future, not only for ourselves, but for our siblings, for our family members, for our children, just for everybody. And that's what motivates us more than titles or job descriptions or anything like that. It's a common goal we have. So we understand we can't work without each other.
And as people get older, I think their egos get more and more developed and more out of check, fewer checks and balances. And you know, I often say no logos, no egos when we get together, but it's really hard to do that. And you guys are modeling some fantastic behavior for the rest of us.
I can't,
you know what, Aaron, these Sophie and Maureen, they don't have to do anything I suggest because they're leading this.
I know. Well, that's evident in our conversation, right? Yeah. Is they are self-motivated and getting it done. So that is abundantly clear in this conversation that we know who's driving this, and it is that is what gets me excited, Lawrence. I mean, it is phenomenal,
I'm just trying to keep up, Aaron. I'm just trying to keep up.
Well, hey, I can't thank you all enough for joining in today's conversation. Sophie, Maureen, Lawrence, it was fun. It was a great way to kick this off, good way to start sharing this information. And I think you guys have cultivated something very, very exciting. And so thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, for everything you do.
Thank you, Aaron, Sophie, and Lawrence.
Yes. Thank you, Sophie and Maureen. Wonderful.